You are listening to the Loikamania Pop Culture Podcast. Is brought to you by CheapGraphicNovels.com, where you can purchase your favorite trade paperbacks and hardcovers for up to 45% off cover price.
How's it going, everybody? You're listening to Loikamania, episode 59. This week, we have a very special guest, one of the best, I would say, pound for pound, best storytellers in the comics biz right now, at least on the artistic side. He is Mike McCone. Mike has been in the business for over two decades now, and he has seen a lot in the industry change. I mean, from the incursion of the digital medium into comics has really changed the game quite a bit. And we kind of talk about some of that stuff here. We also go into his career. We talk about his work. We get into some process stuff. The usual Loikamania interview. I will admit I was rather giddy to have him on the show. So I was if I come off a little too excited talking to the guy, I apologize in advance. But I've been a fan of his for a long time, and I was very much honored to have him on. Of course, if you want to see more of his work, if you need a place to pick up his stuff, you could go to CheapGraphicNovels.com, our sponsors, our pals, and they have a selection of his work, including his Teen Titans stuff in trade paperback, his Avengers Academy stuff, and many more. Once again, CheapGraphicNovels.com. They take good care of us here. They'll take good care of you as well. And finally, as I do every week, I'm going to ask you once again to please stop by our iTunes page and leave us a review. It would be greatly appreciated. It will increase the visibility of the show, and there's just all kinds of good things that come with it. So yeah. Do that. Of course, I will also be at the New York Comic Con, and if you want to see me, I will be located at the Podcast Arena. If I'm not there, I'm probably away because the New York Comic Con is a fun little show, and I have plenty of friends out there, so I'll probably be roaming around. If you hear me or you recognize me, you're welcome to stop me at any time and say hi, and I will gladly chat with you for whatever time I can afford. So yeah, I'll see you guys in New York. And once again, iTunes reviews, and you guys take care, you take it easy, and come back next week where me, Sean McKeever, and a couple other friends talk about a TV show that I absolutely love. It's called The Wire, and we're going to spend about an hour talking about it and why we love it. So, see you next week, and until then, you guys take it easy. We're back, and this time I am joined by Mike McCone. He's well known, of course, for his work on books like Exiles, Teen Titans, Fantastic Four, and Avengers Academy most recently. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me, Pat.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of your work. Actually, the first time I've ever seen your work, I don't know if you even remember doing this because this is quite some time back. Like back in '93, Marvel was doing this. They're doing this big push for the anniversary of the X-Men, for like the 30th anniversary, and they put up this little insert in all of their books. And in that insert, I saw a pinup that you did of Magneto. And I thought, it's like it's him, I think, and then it looks like he's menacing a bunch of Neanderthals or something. But it was a cool looking pinup, and it was kind of moody, and it was very, it wasn't something I'm used to associating with X-Men art, especially at that time in the '90s, because everyone was trying to draw like the image guys back then, like Jim Lee and all of them. So I saw that, I was like, wow, that was a really cool looking, very moody, very atmospheric piece. Yeah, and of course you've been in the industry actually well before that. You did some work for DC and for some Marvel stuff as well. I think you did some Punisher stuff back then. And I was always curious, how did you break into the industry back then?
It's a very simple story. I took my portfolio to a convention in London and showed it to Dick Giordano. Who was, I guess, editor-in-chief at DC at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was 19 years old. This was about 1988.
Wow.
And he liked it, or he was very polite to me, and he took my details away with him. And I kind of thought it went well, but, you know, his job is to be nice to people at shows, or it was. And a couple of weeks later, I got a call from Andy Helfer, who was editing Justice League at the time. And he asked if I'd be interested in drawing an inventory. And, of course, I said yes. I think that was the same week that Kevin Maguire left the book. So the inventory that I was drawing actually was printed in the issue after Kevin left. And that was pretty much it. So I was kind of in by default. I have no story of years of struggle or working for independents who steal your money. I pretty much started with DC. It's been downhill ever since. Sorry, Marvel.
Well, you've been in the industry for quite some time. You've gotten steady work. You did Justice League, Justice League International, actually, and then you did a few other books for DC. Since you've been around for a while, and you're still, of course, very active in the industry, you're probably more prolific now than ever. I was always curious, as someone who's inside the industry, especially on the art side, were there any real big changes as to how, like, the publishers worked from back then and now?
Well, the internet had a huge effect. Mm-hmm. Email had an amazing effect. When I began drawing comics, I was living in a small village, really, in England, in the Northeast. And every time art board or a script turned up, the guy actually couldn't drive in to the street I lived in because his FedEx truck was too big. He had to park up and walk it in. So I do miss the days of getting huge FedEx boxes of freebies and stuff like that. And, of course, it was much easier to lie about how much work you'd done before email. And nowadays, if you're going to lie, you should only lie about 3 hours ahead of what you can actually do. Back then, I used to lie left, right, and center. I used to tell people I'd done all kinds of work that I hadn't done. So that's changed things. I think technology has changed, but that was only to be expected. And there were pluses and minuses to go along with that.
And one of the things about your work that I really like is that you have a really good sense of character design. Among other things, you've designed most of the Exiles characters for Marvel, for example, the Avengers Academy kids, of course, and there's this Fantastic Four story that I think is very much underrated and needs to be collected and or reprinted somehow, and that's Big Town, which I absolutely enjoyed, and.
Thank you.
It was a fantastic little series that I think more people should kind of keep an eye out for because it really plays to the strengths of the Fantastic Four as characters, and I love I love how you've redesigned pretty much the entire Marvel universe. And the thing about the redesigning you did was it's fairly simple redesigns, but it works so well. It's very aesthetically pleasing to look at. And I was always curious as to the type of training you have. Did you have any kind of training as far as design or even fashion design or something like that? Because I kind of see you have a really good eye for clothing and just the way characters should look.
Well, I actually studied fashion design for a year in college.
Oh wow! Okay.
It was really a means of meeting girls. I don't think I was any good at it. I really enjoy the aspect of my job. It's very rare that you get a Marvel character that can be improved upon because the costumes are so iconic. But it's interesting once in a while to have license to just kind of play around and a little more of a contemporary spin on it. In the case of Exiles, in all honesty, I couldn't remember what the costumes looked like from one month to the next. So I just changed them to save myself from doing any research. And unfortunately, the guy who was drawing the book in the issues that I was taking off was, mm-hmm. was Jim Calafiore, mm-hmm. and nobody ever told him that I was changing the costumes from month to month. So I used to drive him nuts with that. But we're friends still, so that's okay.
Yeah, you guys always share you guys share convention space and all that stuff anyway. So you guys have made up.
Yeah. I'm still paying off my emotional debt to him.
Yeah, Exiles was a really fun book. I thought it was, it was something really different, and I liked, you know, like some of the choices you guys made as far as the characters were concerned. Did you have any input in particular with that book as far as, you know, what characters to use, or was it something that you basically just get the script and you just worked?
Yeah, I guess that was exactly it. I used to get the script and draw the script. Didn't mm-hmm. really give any directions towards, you know, costume designs and stuff like that, mm-hmm. but the story was completely his. I was offered Exiles or Bishop as ongoing series, and mm-hmm. I really wanted to draw Bishop. That seemed like a much cooler character. Mm-hmm. But the guy who was selling my artwork at the time insisted that I do Exiles instead because Blink was a more popular character and easier for him to sell. So that's how I ended up doing it. But as far as the stories go, they were all jibs. And really, really fun stories to draw.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly would love to see you guys kind of get together and do something like, you know, do that again. We, you know, I don't know, do a follow-up or something, do a sequel. It's a lot of fun stuff. Back to that, though. I noticed that you seem to be... You seem to be big on team books. Like, you know, between that, there's Teen Titans, there's Fantastic Four, and of course, there's Justice League where you started. Is there something about team books that you really like to do, or it's just what they want you to do, really?
It's just what they want me to do. It's much easier to draw a solo book. And I think given the choice between the two, then I would definitely choose solo books. But for whatever reason, I tend to get asked to do team books more often than solo books.
Yeah, well, you do really good work with team books, though. I'm always amazed at how you're able to balance, you know, how you're able to juggle those big casts. I mean, I mean, Avengers Academy was fantastic because not only do you get to draw the actual team, you know, the kids, but you always get to have like these guest stars, like these, you know, various Avengers that just show up every now and then. And I think you did a pretty good job, you know, doing all those characters justice.
Well, thanks. Yeah. Avengers Academy was particularly character-heavy, with the six kids and the six instructors, and then the villains and the guest characters. It was pretty intense drawing that book. But Christos made it really easy, really enjoyable.
Yeah, it's quite clear, though, you guys were having a bit of fun with that, because I think that... In that book, really, I got to see some of your best work. I mean, some of the facial expressions are really great, there's just so much to like about that book. I'm really pleased that it's doing really well right now. Though I do miss seeing your work there.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've got the great Tom Rainey.
Yeah, Tom Rainey is great. I love him too. And it's just, you know, I got so used to, you know, I've seen those characters. Like, you know, I think of those characters, I think of your work because, you know. And it's maybe because, you know, you've designed these characters and you're pretty much the most comfortable working with them. So it's just what I'm used to. But I like Tom as well, and he's always been one of the guys I've liked to. Like, I think he kind of started around the same time you did too. So
I think so.
Yeah, it's amazing how you guys have kind of progressed since then. Like, as far as your art styles are concerned, that there's really a noticeable difference in how you guys have evolved. So yeah, it's really cool to see that.
Yeah, Tom is actually one of my absolute favorite pencilers. I think he's hugely undervalued, but his work is just, it's always excellent. He's one of those guys I look to whenever I'm kind of, it's the middle of the afternoon, I'm feeling a little kind of dropping the energy. He's one of the guys that I pull out and take a look at their stuff and gets me invigorated again.
Yeah, he's really good. But back to you though. You mentioned you like solo books, and I really saw that you were getting really into the Spider-Man stuff while you were you alternated, of course, because they had that big Brand New Day experiment with Spider-Man, mm-hmm. and you did 2-3 issues at a time and a few random things here and there, and I really enjoyed your story, and that's where I really started noticing the big changes in the way you did particularly facial expressions. There's something about your facial expressions that I really really enjoyed, and it really started to come front and center during the Spider-Man run. It's great. Like there's that issue where Spider-Man kind of goes after I forgot the name of the villain, but it was they're in that bar, and there's the betting going on. Yeah, the enforcers. Yeah. Yes, that was some fun stuff, and I'm used to you doing team books and doing big fight scenes and all that stuff, but the fairly humorous side of your work is came out there, and I think it turned out good.
Well, thanks. Yeah. One of the advantages of doing solo books is that you can concentrate on different things. Mm-hmm. When I was drawing Avengers Academy, most of my time was spent really just choreographing where the characters were going to stand in relation to one another and just trying to fit them all in the panel and in the page. You don't have that problem with Spider-Man, so you can you can spend your time working on facial expressions and body language a little more.
Yeah, it must have been a pain though to keep drawing all those webs in that costume.
I don't mind the webs at all. I really kind of enjoy them. The rooftops are a different question. They're a pain.
How difficult is it to make Spider-Man emote with a mask on?
I never really found it terribly difficult because mm-hmm. He's such an emotive character physically. Mm-hmm. If you're just doing a headshot, then it's kind of difficult. But I always try to show him a little more of him when he's, when he's interacting with other characters, to show hand gestures and his body language. So sorry, my dog is scratching.
That's okay.
he's very emotive. He's got a full range of physical expression that you can take advantage of. I think if a character like Captain America or Superman was wearing a full mask, it would be much more difficult because they're very stoic and they're very still characters. But with Spider-Man, his whole body expresses how he's feeling, so that helps an awful lot.
And you work with a lot of different writers throughout your career, and then you pretty much work with pretty much all the big names. I mean, you had all the writers you worked with on Spider-Man. You got to work with JMS on Fantastic Four. You got Geoff Johns and Teen Titans. And you even did some Avenger stuff with Brian Michael Bendis during Siege. And out of any, do you find any particular writer's style very easy to work with, or is there a particular type of style or a particular writer's style that you kind of gravitate towards as far as scripts that you're working on?
I much prefer working on plots rather than scripts, but okay. That really isn't an opportunity these days. Since that, I can't even remember the last time I worked on a plot. So if I can talk to a writer, then I tend to enjoy it more. Mm-hmm. Geoff and I talked an awful lot on Teen Titans. We just talked through the scripts, and if I had suggestions, he would generally incorporate them into the stories themselves. And we talk 6 issues ahead of what we were doing, so he could. He could write things that I wanted to draw, and that made life a lot easier. But on the other hand, people like Bendis, who I just got a script and drew it, it was really a great story. So at the end of the day, as long as the story is good and is worth my time, then I don't have any preference really.
Oh, excellent. And you mentioned Teen Titans. That run on Teen Titans was one of the most memorable runs that I've ever seen in that book. I was really, when you had left the book, I thought that I thought it was really missing something. I think the last story we did was the big Dr. Light thing. Like around Infinite Crisis. I thought that was, you know, it was a really good send off for you because you got to do the big epic battle with all the Titans against Dr. Light and all that. Mm-hmm. But I was really sad that you left the book because I think part of what made that book really work was you and Jeff, and you guys were really on, especially from the beginning. You know, that you guys started off by basically crippling Kid Flash, and that was it was one of those shocks where you're just like, holy crap, I can't believe they did that. And then the whole book really went was great. The storyline where they go to the future. There's a lot of memorable moments in that book, and it just wasn't the same when you left. And unfortunately, I end up dropping that book afterwards because it felt like something was missing. I think the two of you really had something going in there. So just wanted to tell you how much I enjoyed that particular run.
Very nice to see you. So.
Now, as far as, I want to talk a little bit about your process. Once you get a script, and of course, and you read through it, what's your typical, process? Do you work a certain way with regards to layouts, or do you work in order as far as page numbers go? Or?
I generally try not to draw thumbnails. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. It really depends if the script is clear or not. Sometimes it's necessary just because the dialogue is really carrying the story. And in cases like that, then I only need the thumbnail just so I have a visual shorthand of what I need to be drawing. But in most cases, I can just go straight to drawing. And I use a Cintiq, which is a digital monitor, to draw on, to pencil on. So I've got my page template set up, and generally what I'll do is I'll read the script a couple of times and make notes of what reference that I might need and what models I need to build. I use a 3D modeling program called SketchUp. So I'll do that for, I guess, that takes me a few days to get my prep work done, to get ready to draw, and then I just start at page 1 and go through to page 22, and ideally I like to get all of the penciling out of the way. It takes me a couple of weeks, and then I'll print everything out on boards in blue line and spend a couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, inking it. I like to go through in stages. So when I'm drawing Spider-Man, for example, I'll generally draw Spider-Man, get all of those figures out of the way, and then the supporting cast and the villains, and then put them all together in Photoshop. It's very production line kind of system.
Yeah. That's
the hard work. It's really the penciling, just putting it all together, so that when I begin to ink, I can just spend that time really enjoying what I'm doing. Not that I don't enjoy the penciling, but the penciling is the hard work, and inking is the reward, I guess.
Okay, well, I did not know you actually go through all that, through that such a lengthy process to put a page together. I always thought that you, it looks very, when I look at your stuff, it looks very much, just typical hand-drawn. I was actually going to ask you later on if you've ever dabbled with, doing digital work. But I didn't know that you actually do.
I draw it, the same as I would with a pencil.
Yeah, but but using of course a Cintiq, which a lot of people tend to favor as far as penciling is concerned.
Yeah,
I really do not get a sense. I mean, I'm looking at some of your more recent stuff. I really did not get a sense of you using any actual things like SketchUp or anything. Even just looking, I'm looking at the Spider Island Avengers one shot you did.
Yeah,
and it doesn't. It looks like it pretty much looks the same as anything you've drawn. Where it looks like it was all done completely by hand and not in the process that you just mentioned. So that's you do a pretty good job covering up that you're actually doing it that way.
Yeah, I mean the fact that I'm inking it traditionally means that it just looks as though it's hand drawn. And in effect, it kind of is hand drawn. It's just instead of drawing in pencil, I'm drawing digitally. In the case of the Spider Island, the thing to look for is the United Nations. I spent a day making a model of the assembly room and the exterior, because that location is featured throughout the whole book, and it was just time effective, really, to make a model and then print out the model from various angles and, dare I say, trace it. But it looks better than I could have drawn it, so that's my justification.
Well, it really turned out well, and you know, and it doesn't look like it doesn't. I mean, at least you're building the models yourself. You're doing all that stuff. You're just basically using the technology to your advantage, which I like. Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm not. You know, I draw myself. Unfortunately, I can't really wrap my head around that stuff right now. It's amazing to me that people can do both. You know, do work by the traditional medium and right. then working digitally as well. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that you ink your own stuff. Like, how long have you been inking your own work as far as, your sequential art's concerned?
Oh, not too long at all. I think I started inking covers for Wildstorm about 3 or 4 years ago. And it's probably only been a couple of years since I've been inking myself on interiors. Just did a few pages here and there when books were late. And there wasn't time to find an inker, and that just kind of morphed into inking myself, and I'm really, really enjoying it. Actually, I've put it off for 20 years, so it took me a while to get around to it. But now that I have, it's I can't imagine letting anyone else ink me.
Oh yeah! Wow. Okay. Yeah, I really liked it. You inked the Avengers one shot here that I just talked about, and I really like. The line work, it looks really, for lack of a better term, it looks really lush. It's the best way to describe it. It's really nice. There's a nice quality to the line. I like the various the thin and thick lines that you use. It really works out well. When was the first time you actually did your own inks in a story, or do you recall what book it was?
I did an issue of Miss Marvel, I think 2 years ago, and it was awful, to be honest. The inks, there's one line with it throughout the whole book, and it's very thin, and it really. It served as a good lesson to me, that not to be too precious about getting every single line exactly the way you want it, because when it's reduced, it's barely visible anyway. Mm-hmm. And it took a few it took a few comics, and by that I mean seeing a few comics that I did in print to help me figure out what was possible and what wasn't, and what worked best. And that's still an ongoing process, because obviously it really depends on the colorist as well. Colors can help or hinder the inks. So, but I wouldn't pretend to be a very good inker. I'm just enjoying it, and I'm trying to get better.
Mm-hmm. I think you're doing fantastic work with your own inks. Now, what do you use to ink? I mean, what type of pens or nibs or brushes do you typically use?
For the longest time, for pretty much all of the time I've been inking, I've been using the Faber-Castell Pitt pens. But I've just started using a brush a little more. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to trying to figure out how to do that. It's very difficult to use a brush, so I'm generally terrible at it. I can probably see myself sticking with the pens for the time being, and hopefully, one day, 20 years from now, I'll be confident enough to put down a brush line. But now I'm generally using brushes for stuff like hair and clothing here and there. Mm-hmm. But often I have to go in and tidy it up with a pen anyway. So. Mm-hmm.
I'm terrified of working with brushes, though, myself. I mean, I use. Have you ever tried using brush pens?
Yeah, you can actually get the brush pens, the Faber-Castell brush pens. Okay. But still difficult.
Yeah, I can imagine, because, you know, there's the different, you know, the different thicknesses of the brushes are, you know, that's kind of where mm-hmm. you kind of where you have to know when will be the right one to use at any yeah. specific instance. I mean, then rendering details or doing, you know, the line work can be a pain, but, you know, if you're filling with blacks, you know, it's much easier.
Yeah, actually, mm-hmm. I do use brushes to fill the black areas. Mm-hmm. And that's when I kind of practice. If I get a large area to fill, I'll just kind of mm-hmm. play around with the brush and try to get a steady line. Mm-hmm. But it's embarrassing, really.
You kind of have an excuse. You're just starting to learn it, and you know it's nice that you're branching out and trying to learn, you know, the other aspects of it. Now, recently, you've been posting a lot of you know, sketches, or I don't know if they're warm ups or commissions, but you've been posting. You know, you're playing with watercolor now. Is this something you've always been doing, or that you've never really shown anyone, or this is something you're kind of dabbling with right now because you can do it?
Well, I hadn't really painted since college, so it was 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember reading an interview with John Buscema mm-hmm. years ago, and he said that he thought the ideal way of producing comic book artwork mm-hmm. would be to have ink lines with watercolor colors. And that always struck me as a really good idea. So occasionally I'll have some downtime from a script, and instead of just playing Xbox, I'll just draw something up for myself and throw a little paint around and see what happens. And they seem to be popular with people at conventions and people who want commissions. So generally that's kind of... that's taken over from the regular pen and ink kind of commissions that I do now. Because once people see color, then they insist on color.
Well, go ahead. I was going to say, they look really good. And, you know, I see you post them all the time. Like, okay, I need to get me one of these.
mm-hmm. Well, we can definitely figure something out for you. You mentioned that you like the White Queen.
Yeah, yes. Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be really easy because white and white.
Yeah, that should be fairly easy. You mentioned conventions and sketches. You do a lot of cons each year. Like, how many cons do you typically do? Because I see you in pretty much every Wizard show. It looks like they have you in their guest list.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think I moved here
mm-hmm.
About 2.5 years ago, 3 years ago, and I just completely overdosed on conventions because mm-hmm. I'd done maybe one convention a year
mm-hmm.
and then when I got here I went crazy. I was flying all over the country every weekend, and now I guess I think I've done about 6 or 7 this year, and next year hopefully I'll only do maybe 3 or 4
mm-hmm.
You know, the big conventions that you really have to hit, like San Diego and New York and stuff like that. But it got a little intense there for a while.
Yeah, the convention scene is a lot of fun. Do you have any funny stories or anything like that from all your travels around?
Oh my goodness. Well, I've got a friend who's he's just retired actually. He's a police officer in New Jersey. Called Off-White, Mike White, and he's a big Green Lantern fan, a big comic book collector,
mm-hmm.
and a big artwork collector.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of years ago at San Diego, it was really late, and we were in Hyde Bar, and pretty much everyone had cleared out. And we were sitting with my girlfriend, actually. She wasn't my girlfriend then, but mm-hmm. we were still pretty... We'd had a few cold drinks, and... Mike was interested in one of my covers for Green Lantern. So I set him the challenge of flying to Las Vegas to get me a shot glass. And if he did, if he completed this mission, I'd give him the cover, and never for a moment expecting that he'd take me on.
Oh.
Like an hour later, we find ourselves in the airport, and he's getting patted down by the security. So he flies to Las Vegas and he comes back and he gives me a T-shirt saying what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. But he didn't bring me a shot glass. So, I honored our bet, and he got the Green Lantern cover. And that was really in revenge for the year earlier when he sent me to Tijuana without telling me it was in Mexico, which was a shock.
And so, yeah. You mentioned you pretty much just moved, you know, to the U.S. fairly recently. Like, how are you liking living here, you know, for the past couple of years?
I've seen the two extremes now, because when I moved here, we moved to New York. We lived on the other west side,
mm-hmm.
and that was very different to what I was used to before that. I was living in the Pyrenees in Spain,
mm-hmm.
right in the middle of the countryside. So to move into the middle of Manhattan was a huge culture shock for me. It's the first time I'd ever lived in the city. So that was intense, but enjoyable. And then at the beginning of this year, we moved to San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
So we see the polar opposites of the U.S. And I love it here.
Yeah, it's pretty relaxing out here.
Yeah. we're really enjoying the fact that the weather now is about as cold as it's going to get. And we got lots of friends in New York who we're going to be sending photographs of palm trees to all winter long.
Yeah, and you know, living out here has relocating kind of changed some of your work habits as far as, when you work or, like, time of day that you work or anything like that?
It's not really the location of geographically, but living in an apartment in a fourth floor wardrobe in New York, your work pattern is dictated by the rest of the people in the building.
Because
mm-hmm. once they get home from work, it gets pretty loud.
mm-hmm.
But here I get up at around 5:36, and I work through until about 10 each day. So drawing a monthly book, it's just a question of which hours do you get off work rather than which hours you have to choose to work.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good, at least. Your next big gig is Astonishing X-Men with. With Greg Pak. Yeah. I love that teaser image that you guys had released, and of course, without asking for spoilers, how is that particular project going at this time?
It's going pretty well. We're still working on the first issue, but I think a lot of people are going to be happy with it. If for no other reason than you don't have to buy any of the Rex books to read this.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of a standalone book, even though we have obviously lots of X-Men in the book.
Will it still feature, like, pretty much the cast for that book, that, you know, the cast that it's always had, or you'll be making some changes there?
They're shaking up the characters all across the... mm-hmm. Everyone seems to be choosing sides in the X-Men at the moment.
Of course, yeah.
We've got characters like Cyclops and Storm, Wolverine and Armor.
Uh-huh.
So we just have get to cherry pick the coolest characters from the X-Men and use them. So that's pretty cool. I'm really enjoying Greg is doing his thing, which is writing kick-ass comic books. And I think we launch in November. So it's going to be interesting to see how people respond to it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. That teaser, like I said, the teaser image that was released really got a lot of people talking.
It's actually the first cover.
Obviously, that's a story point. So again, I'm not going to get into that just because I don't want any spoilers for it. And I'm really looking forward to reading it. No,
thanks. Marvel will cancel my green card if I'm available.
that's pretty messed up that they're holding that over your head. Oh wow. You've been in the. Actually, I have a couple of some title specific questions I kind of wanted to get into. I know that you had worked on 52, which is the. And yeah, I think you worked on the final issue, or maybe there was more. I don't remember right now. But
well, I was supposed to draw the whole final issue, but there were issues that came into play, and I only got to draw a little bit of it. But
How was working on that particular book? Like, I knew you kind of, you got to it at the end, of course, but was there any how did those scripts look like, or how did they even read? You know, especially since there's four writers involved, and were, yeah. Or did you just receive the, you know, the layout pages that that Keith Giffen had done?
Yeah, that was it. I just received Keith's mini comic, which is how I actually spent the first couple of years at DC drawing. Keith would send me one of his Keith Giffen specials, his mini comics, and they're awesome. They're it's so easy to draw when Keith's done all the hard work. And the only issue really was reference, because I'm a Marvel kid, not a DC kid, so. even at the best of times, I'm kind of lost at sea with DC characters. So, in a book like 52, where it's the last issue,
and you got all the entire DC universe in there,
I had no idea what was going on.
to kind of expand on what you just said, you said you were a Marvel kid growing up. What got you into reading comics? Or, you know, what books were you reading?
When I started reading comics, Marvel had just begun reprinting in black and white their Fantastic Four and Amazing Spider-Man and Hulk stories. So they were available to me, you know, the Jack Kirby and the Steve Ditko stuff. But also my best friend at the time, his father was a signalman. He worked on the railway. Mm-hmm. And he'd receive huge boxes of comics that were used as ballast in the ships, coming over from the U.S. that were, I guess for whatever reason, they just threw them on trains and, you know, had to get rid of them somehow. And he would give his son boxes and boxes of comics, and his son fortunately would share them with me. So before they were really available on newsstands in the U.K., I used to get, Marvel comics from the early 70s. Never DC, just Marvel. So whatever Marvel comics you can think of from the mid 70s, that's kind of what got me into to reading them.
And from there, did you just learn how to, you know, you just learn illustration from reading them back then, or did you kind of have the desire to draw those characters since then because of that?
Yeah. I would draw, and we'd have little competitions between ourselves, but I just did it because I enjoyed doing it. I didn't really, for the longest time, I didn't put together doing it for a living and doing it, you know, just doing it for the enjoyment of it. You look at John Byrne X-Men, and it just looks so cool.
Oh yeah,
you just have to draw Wolverine. I mean, the first time I saw Alpha Flight was at a small convention, and I literally ran home because I couldn't wait to draw Puck. He just looks so cool.
Yeah, Alpha Flight's kind of going through a renaissance right now because of Greg and Fred Van Lente, and all of a sudden it's cool to like those characters again, and it's really nice that, you know, a really good creative team on that book. These days, though, you know, kind of on that note, like, do you still read any books these days? Like, do you have any favorites right now that are ongoing?
I don't really read the monthlies anymore, because I move around so much that it's just difficult to keep track of them. But I pick up trades now and again. I just read the S.H.I.E.L.D. book by Hickman and Dustin Weaver.
Oh, yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. That was incredible. And I picked up the Scarlet by Bendis and Maleev. I really prefer to just pick up, you know, the trades so I can get I wouldn't say the whole story because people don't write whole stories anymore, but a good chunk of them. But every once in a while I look at your photos that you're posting on Twitter of your library, and I'm like, oh my goodness. I don't know where to begin with that.
I think I'm mostly caught up in all that stuff I've been picking up. it really is a lot nicer to pick up trades. I mean, it's, you know, I buy single issues and I end up just giving them away when I'm done because I really want to keep up and see what's going on. And, you know, it's still a lot of fun, but, you know, in the end, like, where am I going to put all this stuff? So I just give stuff away, and I hold on to, I hold on to the ones I, you know, that I really, you know, that you know, that I really absolutely like. So yeah, the whole buying comics thing is getting ridiculous, and then, you know, the digital thing might become my next step up. And have you ever tried? Have you tried reading comics digitally, or, you know, do you have anything? Do you have anything that could work as a reader, like maybe a phone or an iPad or anything like that? And have you tried it?
Yeah, I actually bought my first digital comic last week, and it was, of course, Ultimate Spider-Man #1, which is it looks glorious. It looks incredible. But having gotten used to reading trades, it was over in the blink of an eye. I read it in 5 minutes, and I hope, you know, there are actual physical comic books to buy in a few years, rather than just be consigned to the iPad.
Yeah,
I like seeing the artwork right in front of me.
Yeah, and
getting nice for him.
Yeah, and you know, it's also nice to not have to worry about, you know, your phone or your iPad processing while you're trying to do something, you know, and all that. Yeah, it's nice to just be able to turn to any page at will. And I honestly think, you know, there's always going to be a place for the physical stuff. Even if, you know, I mean, if the storefront model disappears, there's always online. I'm pretty sure they'll never go away, because I don't know. It's always nice to have the item. There are all kinds of issues with regards to buying digital that, you know, that people are still, you know, trying to figure out, you know, like, you know, you're basically buying the license to have it. What happens when the license, you know, if there's some kind of problem with your account? There's all kinds of problems that need to be thought about. So I'm pretty sure the books are pretty safe. I am not worried at all.
No, well, I mean, I do see problems with the digital model. I was a subscriber to Audible.com, which is an audiobook website, and I must have bought 30 or 40 books from them and cancelled my subscription a few months ago, and now I can't listen to any of them because, I need to have an active account with them, and I'm not sure if that's the case with comic books, but I hope not.
Yeah, but I think with comic books, the real issue is there has to be somewhere out there. There's something that archives, like, you know, the purchases that each account makes, and I think the issue is, you know, what happens if, I mean, I'm sure everything's going to be backed up, but, you know, what happens when, you know, when it fails? I mean, it's never really been truly tested yet, so it's everyone's basically just learning as we go along. So I mean, we'll see, but. Again, I am not worried at all. I will have another book. I will have your Astonishing X-Men on my bookshelf soon enough.
Thank you.
Yeah. So as far as, I mean, you're working on X-Men now. You mentioned you always liked it. Are there any other characters that you've always wanted to kind of work on, but you haven't gotten a chance to yet, and would love to, you know, to tackle one of these days, you know, down the road?
Probably the only one that really comes to mind is the Hulk. I've done them a couple of times.
Yeah, in Fantastic Four, right?
Yeah.
Right before the whole Planet Hulk thing.
Right, yeah. So I'd love to do a really cool Hulk story. I've been talking to... do you read Stuff of Legend?
Stuff of Legend? I don't think I do, which...
It's a creator one, but it's really cool. It's about... I'll let you discover what it's about for yourself. But it's written by a guy called Mike Ritt, who
An editor, right?
Yeah, was. He was an assistant editor at Marvel when I was working on X-Files, and he's a really good writer. And hopefully, we're going to meet up soon and cook up a Hulk story that we can pitch to Marvel. He's got some really good ideas, and I'm just going to tag along and take most of the credit for it.
I actually just looked up that, you know, Stuff of Legend, and it looks fascinating. It's a period piece, around World War II, and I'm a sucker for any kind of period piece along those lines. But I'll definitely give them a look.
It's awesome. The guy drawing it as C.P. Wilson is he's incredible.
C.P. Wilson sounds familiar. He did some Stormwatch stuff or stuff for Wildstorm before, didn't he? And he also did some Marvel work, I think. Sounds familiar.
Yeah,
he sounds familiar. I think that's him. I recognize his style.
Okay.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
Yeah.
And you also mentioned though you want to do some Hulk stuff. I mean, you are working with Greg Pak on X-Men. He just had a very very memorable run on Hulk. Maybe he could appear in X-Men.
Yeah, maybe he can have a word with the editor for me. But, yeah, he might not want me to leave X-Men, so. Probably not the person to ask.
you draw a pretty good Hulk, though. I mean, you draw a very imposing Hulk. I think you draw a great Mr. Fix-It, because the variety of facial expressions that that character would have and under your hand would be quite good.
Well, thanks. I don't think I ever read the Mr. Fix-It. He's the gangster.
Yeah, he's the gangster. Yeah. Yes, and he comes out in a suit. He's got his fedora, mm-hmm. and every now and then he has a gun, which I find funny. He just thought of the Hulk with a giant Tommy gun, you know.
Okay, that will figure in our pitch then.
that'll be fun. I mean, you got to draw pretty much every other every main character, from the DC and the Marvel universes. I mean, you even did work for Wildstorm way back. Like you did a Spartan miniseries, I think, with Kurt Busiek, which I thought was. When I saw that book come out, I always thought, wow, that's kind of, I like your stuff, but I was like, it still doesn't look like a Wildstorm book, but that's cool. I mean, they're trying new stuff.
Yeah, I couldn't draw like that to save my life. Mm-hmm. Around about that time, mm-hmm. a few people had mentioned to me that maybe I'd get more work if I was drawing like, the image guys, but I just find it impossible to draw like anybody else. So,
yeah, of course, because you're your own person, and I mean, you wouldn't get to where you are right now if you drew like someone else. I mean, your stuff, like I said, it looks really good. You have a really good sense of space in your panels, and I love how everything looks so fluid. With your stuff, there's a certain bounce to all the characters. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about when I say that with bounce, but when someone's in the middle of doing something, it looks like they're actually moving, even though it's a still image you're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
There's a double page spread from your Avengers run that I remember where Cap's about to fight the Taskmaster, and then all these other guys are in the background, and just the way you handled it looks like he just smacked. There's Venom in the background with Miss Marvel going through him, and then you have Fandral jumping up. And I like, no, not many people like draw people like when they're leaping up, and you see the bottom of their foot on the wing, and then there's Spidey in the background too. And I like how he kind of looks like he's coming out of those pillars in the background too. I love your stuff, man. Honest here. Yeah.
I mean, I always say that I have to give credit to the writer, because mm-hmm. generally the books that people enjoy the most, or mm-hmm. the books I enjoy drawing, or mm-hmm. actually the books that have my better work are generally the better written books. So I have to give the writer a lot of the credit for. I give Bendis a lot of credit for that story, because it was paced beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
The panel descriptions were spot on, just enough information to let me go to work.
Mm-hmm.
On the flip side, of course, anything I draw badly, I can blame on a writer.
That's what they made me draw. Yeah, you're kind of in a really good spot there. I'm kind of flipping through your Avengers issues right now, and I'm just, man. Again, there's a half splash page where it looks like it's Ronan, and then he's about to get jumped by all of the Hood's goons. And again, a great panel. I love how everything kind of centers around the Hood, and he's shooting his guns on both sides, and it's really good composition. And it's a chaotic panel because there's a lot of characters showing up there, but somehow it looks very clean. It's well laid out. You could tell who's who, and there are a lot of people who do this stuff, but the pages or the characters are never as detailed as the ones you mm-hmm. rendered here. So,
That's where Photoshop comes in. It makes life more time consuming, but mm-hmm. it makes life easier, because on a page like that, I draw every character
individually.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Hours compositing it in Photoshop, but But when you feel like you've got a really good story to work on, then that's not a problem, you know, because you know that as long as you hold up your end, then the product, the finished product, mm-hmm. is going to be really enjoyable. And of course, you know, Bendis is about the closer things you can get to a guarantee these days of a really good comic book.
So, that's fantastic. I'm pretty sure he'll like to hear that.
Well, I'd love to work with him again, you know, but I I've never met him. The only, you know, thing we've done together is this Avengers these two issues, but it was a real kick to do.
Yeah, I'd love to see you guys work together on more stuff. I think, you know, it'd be cool to see you, you know, do more Avenger stuff. I think you know, with some of the new teams that they're going to, you know, be that they're going to be debuting, the new rosters rather, you know, I think it'd be fun to see your take on those characters.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And at this point, we're down to our last question. I had a listener question here, and it involves a convention. And he's like, okay, Ryan Holiday asks, I know he's been to Dragon Con one or two times, so I'm sure he must have a good con story from there. Because that con's insane.
I, you know what? I don't really. I went to Dragon Con, I think, 2 years ago, or mm-hmm. last year, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just incredible. I mean, it's not like any other convention. Anyone who hasn't been to Dragon Con has mm-hmm. whether they know it or not, they've missed the best mm-hmm. convention of the year. And my girlfriend and I just kind of wandered around like Brad and Janet in Rocky Horror.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were just gaping at the costumes. The one anecdote I have, it's not really an anecdote, but there's a guy called Spat Octan who used to run Wizards Convention.
Yes, I've heard of him. Yeah, I've dealt with him before.
Yeah, and he cosplays quite a lot at Dragon Con. He takes like five or six costumes, but one of his costumes is what he calls his fantasy killer. So he dresses as something that will kill a man's fantasy. And this year he was an Ironette. You know, the Red Sun.
Oh my God! Really?
Last year he was Silk Spectre from Watchmen, and he is a hairy man. If you're off at Dragon Con and you see see a big bear dressed in a skimpy outfit, that's Spat.
I was there this year. I might have encountered him. I don't remember the con. I've seen a lot of cross dressing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, anything goes at Dragon Con, pretty much. I'd love to go back this year. I was meant to go back, but I had to cancel because I had deadlines. But it's easily my favorite convention. Only been once.
Yeah, it's nice to know that you have your priorities straight. At least you get your deadlines done. And Mike, before we close out, where can people find you online?
I don't have a website, so pretty much Facebook.
Facebook and Twitter, of course, right?
Twitter. I don't really tweet that much. I enjoy Facebook a lot more. I'm knowing much more people on Facebook than I can on Twitter.
Okay. So, yeah, we'll link to both so people can follow you and check out your stuff. Because, like I said, I saw your follower count on Twitter. I'm like, that's not right. You need more followers. we need to get you more followers. And you post sketches pretty much almost daily whenever you could. So it's
it's a lot of fun, you know. Sketches give you an opportunity to draw characters you don't usually get to draw. It's kind of a kick. It's a very solitary job most of the time. So getting chat to people online is good fun.
I mean, Twitter and Facebook have really, it's really brought, you know, the people in the biz together, you know, a bit more, because there's a lot of interaction, a lot of people, you know, talking to each other, you know, through even if it's just in small bursts, like, you know, like we occasionally do on Twitter and of course Facebook. It's always cool to see that, and it's always kind of cool too, you know, when you want them, you feel like showing your stuff. It's always cool when you get a reaction from people, because you know, you put your work into it and people need to see it, and it's always nice to get the instant feedback. So
yeah, that's why we're doing it, you know.
Yeah.
So you want people to look at your stuff, and it's good. you know, it's just, it's interesting to see how other professionals go about their daily business. I'm as interested in that stuff as anybody else.
Yeah, it's a lot of people were, you know, a lot of people really know how to use it. A lot of people are not cut out for it. Yeah, but it's always fun to see. It's always funny to see, you know, people melt down or whatever.
Yeah, I know more about Ron Mars's life than he does at
that point.
Whenever he's got a problem with his phone carrier or some FedEx hasn't delivered a package, I feel more involved than he does at this point. I'm living his life.
You're engrossed by what's going on, you know. And you know, he's a good dude. It's just interesting. Like, wow, this is. You know, sometimes sometimes people don't know when to really limit. You know what they're talking about, and sometimes it's okay. Again, sometimes I worry that, you know, people spilling out their guts all over the internet might come back to bite them later on, or certain gossip columnists start digging your information. You know what I mean?
I know Ron quite a bit, and he's a good lad. But goddamn, Ron.
All right, Mike. Well, once again, thank you for doing the show. I really appreciate it. I'm excited for your Astonishing X-Men run that's coming. And do you have anything before that that's coming out though? Like, we just had the Spider Island Avengers one shot you did with Chris Yost the other week. But do you have anything else in the interim before that?
No. I've been working on that. A few covers here and there. That's it, really. I enjoy working on one project at a time and try to use the commissions. It's really a palate cleanser.
And then I'll be seeing you at the New York Con this year, I believe, since you're listed in Artist Alley over there.
Yeah. I just got my assignment yesterday for my table assignment, so I've actually got somewhere to sit.
Fantastic. We'll also put in your booth location with this. I think this comes out about a week or two before the con. So, well, I look forward to seeing you there. It's pretty funny though. I mean, we both live in San Diego, and we'll see each other.
We should go and grab some.
Grab some lunch sometime. Yeah, well, maybe down the road. I think that'll be fun. Kind of talk shop and all that.
My girlfriend's actually writing a zombie story now, and she's setting it in San Diego. So maybe you can be our travel agent. Some interesting spots to kill zombies.
I know perfect. I know perfect places where you can infect people, and yeah, people I could do without.
Okay.
All right, sir. Once again, thank you very much. Keep up the amazing work, and look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks.
Well, thanks for having me on, Pat.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, thank you again, and you take care.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
The views and opinions expressed by the guests and those providing comments are theirs alone and do not necessarily reflect the views of Pat Loika. You can reach Pat by sending an email to loikamania@gmail.com. This has been a Dial R Studios production. Though nothing will keep us.